Welcome to American Variety Radio. I'm your host, Court Lewis. You know, recently I ran across a term I'd never heard before, trad wives, T-R-A-D wives, right? So it's an abbreviation of traditional wives and describes something that's not exactly a movement, I gather, but more like a trend for married women, generally young women, I think, to stay home and do housework and child rearing while the husbands work outside the home and support the family as the only breadwinner. So it's basically a return to the traditional 1950s model of marriage, as, you know, represented by TV shows like Father Knows Best and Ozzie and Harriet, if anybody out there remembers those things. And it's being publicized by, you know, again, as I say, by young women, I think, who go on social media to kind of proselytize for this lifestyle as being more fulfilling than being out in the workforce. So it's really a pushback, it seems to me, against the idea that it's shameful or dehumanizing for a woman not to have a profession, or at least a job in the work world outside the home. And in that sense, it's a question of gender roles, too. So it's part of our theme on American Variety that I call genderology. And my guest this week is a professor of sociology at Whitman College in Walla Walla, Washington. I always love the sound of that. Whose research focuses on the intersection between social roles and relationships and the realities of everyday life. So it's right down the alley of this show. Her name is Dr. Michelle Janning. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks, Court. I'm really happy to be here.
Nice of you to be on. You know, it's going to be an interesting show because you're the perfect person for it.
Thank you. I agree. And the topic is really interesting and it intersects a lot of my interests. So I'm really grateful that you asked me to do this.
Yeah, I can see that it does. So how big a deal is the trad wives trend at the moment, if you have any idea? How many women, you know, in general are posting to the various social media platforms about this? Is it a lot of people or?
I don't think it's a lot, but it's hard to say. This is something you could measure a few different ways. You could look at labor statistics about the number of parents or stay-at-home wives there are in the U.S. It's a numeric minority. You could look at numbers of followers. I think if I was to guess, it's something that might be in the tens of thousands of people who are espousing the word trad wives and talking about it, even though there are people who might be fulfilling the role without necessarily labeling themselves that way. I don't know that large of a trend, but it's definitely something that people are talking about.
The trad wives trend. Yeah, I think you're probably right in what you just said, that there are probably many, many more people who living that lifestyle who also don't know about the term trad wives. Do you think I'm right in saying it's not really a movement yet, but really just a trend or an online discussion topic like there are so many?
I think you're right. You know, if we, as a sociologist, there are different ways we could define a social movement. Usually it's a collective effort that's a response to something that people think needs to be different, whether it's make a new version of what we already have that needs to be better, or if it's to get rid of something that we find to be problematic. Often in response to things that people see and define as problematic. But the interesting thing about social movements is they have to be a collective and often kind of public enterprise. And so the puzzle I'm wrapping my head around is how do you have a social movement when the version of this role that we're talking about is quite a private version of self? So I'm not sure I'm willing to say it's a social movement, but I do think it's a trend. And I think we need to pay attention to this to see if a collective voice of people who would label themselves this way is something that gains momentum over time.
Like a lot of things do. So let's get kind of to the meat of it. What's the basic premise of the idea? I mean, what do trad wives see as the benefits of this lifestyle for themselves and for their families?
My understanding of it is the word trad, or part of the word trad, is about traditional, right? So the notion is these are women. There's a feminized version of this, right? These are wives. They're in, for the most part, or maybe in their entirety, in heterosexual marriages, and most are mothers. And the goal is a return to something that's perceived as traditional. And tradition is things that seem like they've withstood the test of time, feel ritualized, call to mind something from the past that people want to honor today. So I think this is a collection of women who are seeing themselves as choosing, and the word choice is really important here, choosing a lifestyle that brings them back to what they perceive to be a traditional role of wife and mother. Usually mothers are part of the story, not always.
So do they think that it makes them happier and makes their families happier and more functional than otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the depiction. And in media reports that we've seen over the last several years in the UK and Australia, and now in the US a little bit more, the motivation has a lot to do with choosing something they perceive to be better for themselves. And by better, the characteristics of family life that have gotten very stressful come to the surface. So overworked. I mean, I have a whole list of reasons why I think maybe this has happened, but I think the underlying premise is that let's get back to something that clarifies roles, that makes sure that our children are socialized in families and in homes, and that the clarification of roles means that people kind of know what they're supposed to do and can find pleasure in that. And the pleasure is important because it's a sort of who's to tell me that I can't be happy to stay at home. And this is an ongoing discussion, of course, with regard to women's roles in society in general. So I think it's a choosing of the stay-at-home role as a way to simplify life in response to a lot of different things that have been going on, as a way to honor roles that people perceive to be true, probably biologically centered, and fulfilling.
Yeah, so maybe it's not so much against something else as it is for something they see as positive, like kind of pro-choice for that lifestyle in that sense. But I mean, is there an element of it that you see that's explicitly against feminism and all the changes that feminism in the 1970s and afterwards brought to the lives of American women? I mean, in other words, is this a direct reaction to feminism in any way, or at least some element of it?
I think that that's probably true for some, but I think that would be an oversimplification. I think there are lots of things that have been going on that this is a response to. I think the notion of feminism has failed women, there's a failed promise that we thought we could have it all, and it turns out that's exhausting, means that it's a response to that. I'm not sure that's actually a response to feminism as much as it is a response to structural conditions that have created challenging work and family situations for families. But I think it's framed as explicitly against feminism by some. But there are a lot of other things it could be kind of a response to, maybe not against, but response to. So for example, the overwork, like I mentioned, the notion of it's impossible to do it all, the notion of pressures for, in particular, mothers to not only do it all, but be entirely devoted to their children. And so when you've got these ideals of what Sharon Hayes called intensive mothering paired with careers, it becomes exhausting. I also think it might be a response to increasing gender fluidity in our society. So the notion of people perceiving masculinity and femininity as less of a binary and more of a spectrum, for people for whom that's uncomfortable, a response might be to entrench in there are only two choices and I'm choosing one of them. So the return to traditional roles might be in part a response to those kinds of, I guess, maybe identity politics that might be out there, which can be an important part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm. So like during the high inflation period of the early 80s, which I remember, this thing we're talking about has been a topic of conversation for a long time, kind of the, in effect, the embedded unfairness to women of being forced out into the work world and then having to come home and be a traditional housewife and mother on top of that, right? You know, two jobs and just not fair. And I think it's been kind of moderated and changed, modified over time over the last few decades. But still, I mean, back in the early 80s, two-income families began to be the norm out of necessity because a family of four or five people couldn't make it on one income. It wasn't really, I don't think, driven by feminism or feminist attitudes at that point. It was just economic necessity. So do they talk much about the options, the trad wives online? Do they talk about the options for women for whom being a trad wife isn't an option? I mean, for women in lower-income families that can't manage on one income, or for single or divorced women, for example? In other words, is it mainly an option for economically advantaged and privileged women?
You know, the interesting thing is if you look at data on who are stay-at-home mothers, it tends to be bimodal. It tends to be people on the lower and upper ends of the socioeconomic spectrum. The lower end because childcare is so expensive. So it becomes a moment of deliberation about, can we afford to pay for childcare? Probably not. It's so expensive. So somebody should stay home, that would actually save us money. For low-income families, that is a choice that is sometimes made. For high-income families, the idea of a living wage where one salary is actually enough for somebody to stay home is, of course, more readily an option. The people in the middle, it's harder to say, right? But I think the other part that matters here, and this might be kind of adjacent to what you're talking about, is men have lost ground in the paid workforce, right? And this is a structural issue, right? We see a decline in factory labor, in industrial labor, in jobs that used to be living wages for men, especially working class men, and a decline in those. And so what happens when you have a decline in opportunity for men? Sometimes the thing that happens is a shift towards, let's make sure we're reinforcing masculinity still. I wonder, and this is not something that's explicit in the conversations I've seen online, but I would want to ask the question, could this be about men losing ground economically, especially post-recession, especially COVID, although women's work lives were tremendously difficult during COVID? Maybe this is a response to making sure men still feel like men in an economy where that's harder to find visible in more traditional ways. And the other thing I'll say, I mean, the idea of a stay-at-home mother, wife and mother, and hearkening back to the 50s is, I would say, what a historian Stephanie Kuntz would call a nostalgia trap, right? It's never been the case for a lot of families, especially families of color, especially working class and poor families, where somebody has been able to stay home. So this idealization is not just about class, it's also about race, it's about type of economy and jobs and things like that.
Yeah, so kind of embedded, I think, in what you were saying about the role of men is that I suspect that the people who are doing this online are not the lower socioeconomic end of the bimodal distribution that you described, but the people in the upper end who have the time and technical capabilities to do that. And I also think that their husbands probably approve of this and like it, and that's why they're doing it, and that's why they're talking about it and taking time to be online, kind of, as I said earlier, proselytizing for it. So I suspect the husbands approve and the wives are happy with it. So it's kind of a happy situation as long as it works. But another thing, you know, that occurs to me, I think these are, from the little I've seen of it, it's women in their 20s doing this. And so I think there's maybe a romanticizing of what women's lives in the 50s were really like. For many people, it wasn't necessarily a bed of roses. I mean, for many people, right, it was an abusive situation they just couldn't get out of because they didn't have the financial ability to do that, to earn a living outside the marriage. And so that kind of thing was an element definitely across the country, not for everybody, of course, but was an element of marriage then in the 50s that I think is ignored by the trad wives trenders today, would you say?
I would say. I mean, it's not an unusual thing to kind of reminisce nostalgically about the past. I mean, look, my son is a teenager and a lot of his friends across universities and colleges are having 80s and 90s dances, right? So there's something about the past that, and of course it's all hyper-stylized and totally caricatured and stereotyped and full of things that those of us who lived through those times are like, that's not how it really was, right?
Right.
And I think, you know, the farther back you go, the easier it is to make mistakes about how things really were, or to just gloss over the variation among experiences for women from different kinds of backgrounds. Maybe you have the women post-World War II who are stay-at-home wives, but not by choice. I mean, because they had all of a sudden gained this kind of economic independence working during the war, Rosie the Riveter and all that, and then come home and the sort of mental energy to justify why it's okay to stay home was a new experience for a lot of women, especially middle-class women. And like I said before, for a lot of women, working outside the home for pay has always been the reality. So to idealize something that was a privileged position and probably inaccurate, I think is an interesting thing. And I think the farther away we are from it, and of course, young women who are in their 20s have a lot of media influence to try to get what that was like. I think in some of the news articles, you see reference to Happy Days and Leave It to Beaver. Well, those weren't reality, right? Those were TV renditions of it too. So yeah, right. I think there is a romanticizing of what women's lives in the 50s were really like, for sure. And that romanticization is very alluring and very easy to visualize and stylize and place in the social media platforms that we're seeing that are the ways to get word out today.
Yeah, one thing I sometimes say on this show is that no statement you can make about anything is 100% true. There's always a spectrum. You know, there's always a bell curve, and there's a middle, and then there are the outliers. And, you know, so there's a wide spectrum in the reality of anything you can think of, really. And I'm old enough to actually remember the 50s, barely, but I do. And it was the norm, for the most part, that women would stay home and be the homemaker and the mother. But I remember mothers of my friends who were very strong, and in fact were stronger than the husbands, just as personalities, and really ran the roost. You know, the husband would come home and expect dinner, but other than that, he kind of shut up and sat down and watched TV. And,
sure.
And the mom was very strong. I mean, they weren't like little, you know, suppressed wimps by any means.
Right.
You know, the ones I knew were, you know, in many cases, very female and feminine, but were strong, you know. So, I mean, there's a spectrum of things like that.
You're right. It's about control. And when you have clarification of roles, one easy place for people to go to is, what can I control? And the bifurcation or the dividing of roles into men's spheres and women's spheres appears to simplify that. So it's an alluring place to go. I don't have to think about the complications of multiple roles, a career and childcare and house cleaning and all of this. There's a line between those. There's a boundary. And I'm really glad I can afford to do that. This is me pretending to be somebody making this decision. And
that's,
I think,
right.
if you talk to women who are staying at home with their kids, that's exactly rises to the top of one of the reasons to do it. I get to control this part of our world. And that clarification of roles simplifies a kind of maybe seemingly constant negotiation of who's going to pick up the kids today, who's going to cook dinner tonight, whose paycheck matters more. So there's an allure to that, I think, that matters. But like you said earlier, the reality is two incomes are needed in our in contemporary families. And so it's a kind of hard place to be.
You are listening to American Variety Radio, and I'm your host, Court Lewis. We're talking with Dr. Michelle Janning, who's a sociologist at Whitman College out in Washington State, about a new phenomenon, kind of a burgeoning thing, I think, called trad wives, which is a kind of a trend being pushed to some extent online by young women largely to kind of move to the forefront the idea of being a traditional wife, which is where trad wives comes from, and to, you know, have a clear distinction of gender roles. But, you know, so I think we said earlier too that this is a lifestyle choice that's always been there. But in the 70s and after, I remember there began to be kind of a cocktail party social attitude, to put it that way, of, oh, you don't work, you know, kind of which shamed the stay-at-home wife and mother. And I remember the term domestic engineer briefly appeared to,
yes,
to give homemaker status a boost in prestige, I think. But in previous decades before that, it was more a feeling of, and I remember this too, of, oh, you poor thing, you have to have a job to help, you know, make ends meet. And I don't think either of those attitudes is really prevalent today, do you?
Well, not as much maybe, but I do think there is still a tension between kind of who's doing motherhood right. Is it the stay-at-home mom who might feel weird among siblings who have careers who are women? Or is it the career woman or a woman who takes on a couple jobs, who in the eyes of their stay-at-home mother relatives feels like they might not be doing it right? I think that tension and that certainly that anxiety about roles is still there. But what I like to point out with that is that, well, that might be true that women are maybe not pitted against each other, but certainly see each other in ways that there's an evaluation, both self and other. But my question is always, and what about the men? And where are they in this story? So I think, to me, the discussion of kind of who's doing it right, we have to acknowledge that tension is there among women. But I like to take a step out and look at the larger kind of system at play that would say, why is it that the women are discussing this and really only women? And that tells us something also about how women, whether they're in the home full time or not, are still the ones kind of emotionally charged with thinking about the roles of taking care of children and family. So there's the guilt, there's the, am I doing it right? I think that's still there, whether people are doing it intentionally or not.
Yeah, but still, I think that having said all that, that in the past, oh, I don't know, pick a number, 20 years or so, definitely the sharing of labor has moved toward the middle, so that husbands share those tasks that 40 years ago would have been considered women's work, readily share it without any problem. I mean, I know in our household,
I do more
of the cooking, you know, and that kind of thing. So, you know, so it's that kind of reduces the tension to some extent, because there's not this kind of tug of war about, I mean, I remember my father, who, you know, was an engineer, a smart man, you know, he was a county administrator, right? And so he would walk into the kitchen and suddenly he'd be fumbling around like somebody was half blind and like he didn't know where the refrigerator was and didn't know how to, you know, couldn't have boiled an egg, you know. And I think it was a conscious thing on his part. He knew perfectly well how to do those things, but he didn't want to let on that he did, because he would then have to take on the role to some extent. And so
I think you're right. Men are a lot more likely to participate in household division of labor, not at the same rate as women. And any Time Use study that we see in the U.S., Australia, elsewhere, still shows that women are doing disproportionately more of the at-home work, the second shift, it's been called. But you're right, there is a pattern of more men taking on those roles. what I like to think about when people are, I don't know, assessing how have things changed for me, for my family, for my own role, especially if they're fathers or husbands, is to say, well, who are you comparing yourselves to? And there's a great line of theoretical thinking about this that says, you know, well, maybe men are doing more because they're doing more than their dads did. And that, and I think that's certainly definitely true. That's true in my family. That's true in the story that you just shared. I bet a lot of your listeners would say, my husband does way more than my dad did. And I think then the comparison is generationally. But some people like to compare across, well, who's doing more in the household. And that's where those time use surveys come into play to tell the story of men are doing more than they used to and more than their dads, but still not as much as the women necessarily. But you're right. I think the sharing of domestic division of labor is definitely something that we need to pay attention to. It's less stigmatized for dads to show nurturing behaviors with their children. It's less stigmatized for dads to stay home. Yeah. It's less stigmatized for men to earn less money than their wives.
Yeah, and all this is a reaction to economic realities. I mean, you know, just looking at TV ads, for example, 50 years ago, you'd have never seen a man doing the laundry and worried about whether this brand of detergent was better than that brand. But now it's pretty common to see that. But it would have been like, if that had appeared on TV in 1965, it would have been like, what? You know?
Right.
So now it's normal, really. So, you know, we talked about the obvious fact that women who have both of those roles, to the extent that they still maybe have the second role more than the man does and come home and have to do more, being subject to exhaustion and burnout, which is true, right? So does that fact alone tend to validate the tradwife attitude, do you think?
I think that people use that to justify the decision to pick one or the other. Getting back to the things would be simpler if I didn't have so many things on my plate, especially if those things conflict with each other, with time, with energy, with stamina. And so I could imagine a family making a decision that it's not worth it, right? Being pulled in so many directions. And it's still the case because of how we think about men's and women's roles in society that women are more likely to choose to do that. It's also still the case that women are likely to earn less than men. So it's an economically easier decision as well for families that can afford to do it with one income. You know, the other thing I will say, and that I hadn't thought about this until I started looking a little bit more to prepare for this conversation, that COVID also sort of lifted up some respect for people who stay at home because it became more visible to more people. Mm-hmm. You started to hear people say, wow, this is actually really hard, which of course, women who have been doing it this long have always said that. But now there are people who have perhaps a little bit more empathy about it. Along with that, you start to see just trying to handle it all and it becomes impossible. COVID happens, women stay home with kids all of a sudden because homeschooling is required and she makes less money than he does. So staying home, that is not the kind of choice that tradwives are talking about. That feels like a forced choice and that's probably a different kind of woman, but we have to have that as part of the conversation too.
Yeah, and of course also there's the risk you have to consider that a tradwife who may be happy today will end up being abused or divorced or both and left high and dry, you know, 5 to 10 years from now or whatever. So in a way, it's a bet that the woman places on the viability of her chosen lifestyle. Do they tend to focus on that risk in the online conversations that you've seen? Do you know?
I mean, it's hard to find that because these roles are idealized. They're about private life, right? They're a way to create a thicker border between our private life and our public life, which of course we know is an artificial border. Everybody's moving in and out of our homes and grocery stores and real estate. And, you know, these are artificial boundaries. But if you put pressure or feel pressure or make decisions to have roles go back into a place that is boundaried and private, especially in a country where things to be solved that are problematic are to be done at an individual family level. That's a big project in the U.S. We got to fix it within our family. For people who are in really precarious situations, whether it's abuse or mistrust or a mental health problem, it's a lot harder to find people to reach out to. The network gets smaller. It's a lot harder to legitimate the experience because it's only visible to the people behind closed doors. So I think that's a legitimate concern, certainly to watch if we do see an increase. And again, I don't know how big this trend is, but to pay attention to the possibility of private life remaining so private that dangerous things don't get shared or made visible would be worrisome.
Well, Michelle, we're getting toward the end of the show, so just kind of briefly, are there some extreme beliefs within the spectrum of online conversation about tradwives? I mean, for example, that the woman must be totally submissive, or even that marital rape is okay and you just have to put up with it? I mean, are there extremes like that you've seen?
I'm sure there are, and there would be niche audiences that might pay attention to those in ways that they would not be critical. But I think the larger voices seem to be, in the kind of mainstream way, less about those kinds of extremes and more about domesticity, children, connectedness, honor, sanitizing that kind of extreme version in some ways. And there are also some controversial things out there about connecting the Tradwives movement to political orientations and to things that, depending on your political orientation, you would find really troublesome or not. But I think the voices out there, especially the ones that are in social media that are getting a lot of looks, I think those are less extreme, but I would certainly not want to argue that the extremes are not out there.
So again, briefly, how much of this is religious in nature, like the belief that the Bible says that women should be submissive? Is that an element of it?
I think there are either implicit or explicit references to foundations upon which the men's roles and women's roles have to be separate and distinct can be based. I think these can be based in biological essentialism. It's just natural for women to want to take care of the house and children and her husband. And I think these can also be in faith traditions where those kinds of texts have been used in the past and still are used to talk about what the prescribed roles are. So it'd be very easy to go to either of those. But I think if we were to do an interview study of women who would label themselves tradwives, we'd probably see a variety of how much they espouse the religious or faith tradition justification or the biological tradition or neither. There could be other things as well.
So having said all this, to kind of wrap it up, about the range of situations that women find themselves in and about the risks of putting all your eggs in the happy home basket, to call it that, and about the benefits of playing this role if it works well, what do you think, as a sociologist and as a woman and as a person, what do you think is the most sensible and balanced attitude for a young woman to have about this whole thing we've been talking about? Put you on the spot.
If there are, about the trend itself, my hope would be people who are paying attention to this or find it alluring would think about what factors matter besides just their own individual relationship. You know, often when I talk about any of my research pieces or any other kind of presentations, sometimes I jokingly say, you know, it's actually not about you. It's about these larger patterns. And so I would hope somebody would take a step back and say, why am I doing this? Is it because I'm in an era where social media influencing is the way to feel like your story can be told? In that case, does the story matter as much? Is this really a thing that people are deciding, or is it the thing that people are paying attention to? I would ask that. I would also ask, what is it that I feel like I'm giving up or getting in a relationship that this would give me more or less of? I would want people to think about it as a kind of not really a cost-benefit analysis, but I think you could think about it that way, but to never just make it about the couple themselves. What else about future career trajectory? What else about adherence to other roles that connect to things outside of the home? I would want people to think about that. And I think really, honestly, what I really would want is that men are paying attention and scrutinizing things and participating in the conversation in ways that are not just watching or are not just reinforcing one way or the other. I think that often these conversations about women's roles only include women. And we know that men have gender too. So the conversations among men and women, I think, would be really helpful.
Michelle, this has been a very interesting conversation, but to see more about this from the people who are posting about it, go to Twitter or TikTok or Instagram and search Tradwife or use the hashtags Tradwife and Housewife, and you'll find out more about it and see some of these people talking on social media about it. I want to thank you for being on with us, Michelle. It's been very interesting.
Thanks for the conversation.
Thanks to all of you for listening. I hope all of you out there will tune in again next week, same time, same place, for more American Variety Radio.